Welcome to the Gifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Kai. This podcast is sponsored by the GPS Online Program, which teaches you how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business. For more information, go to ChristopherKai.com. Our guest today is Dr. Sohee Jun. She is a top leadership expert, executive coach, and author of Mommy Tracked, How to Take Authentic Risks and Find Success on Your Terms. She helps her executive and emerging leader clients accelerate their career growth based on her 20 years of experience, where she has worked for Fortune 500 companies and global brands like Bank of America, Washington Mutual, and Warner Brothers. Dr. Sohee Jun earned her PhD by her mid-20s and is a former NASA HR specialist. Sohee, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
So NASA, end up getting hired at NASA, which JPL, by the way, for our listeners that don't know, is literally the organization that creates lunar modules that sent our first men into the moon. It's just mind-boggling. So you were an HR specialist. How did you get that job?
Yeah, I mean, I get to really, truly own that I worked with rocket scientists. It's absolutely true. And it was a phenomenal time there. I learned a lot. And so when you ask, how did I get that job? It really was back in the day. Like, I've been in this field for 20 years now, and it's one of my first real jobs, and I call it real, in quotes. But I, you know, opened up the paper, because back in those times, you look for jobs in the Sunday paper. And there was a advertisement for a career fair. And so I was, you know, in the midst of finishing grad school at this time and working on my dissertation. So I wanted to actually get real experience, hands-on experience as well, doing the work that I'm studying to do. So I went to the career fair in my, you know, my graduate school suit at the time, and I landed an interview. So that is how I got an internship, which turned into a full-time job.
So I'm fascinated though, like, did you have any doubts that, because again, NASA's like Harvard. It's like, oh, I'll just go apply for a job at Harvard. When you rewind your life, what were some of the origin stories that you can share with us about this ambition that you had in terms of how you grew up? I mean, were there seeds of ambition in you when you're growing up that allowed you to just say, yeah, I'm just going to apply to NASA? I'm just going to get a PhD in my mid-20s, you know? So let's rewind a little bit, because I want our listeners to not just know what you've done, but how to do it perhaps for themselves.
Yeah, you know, I think that the way that I grew up really created in me a resourcefulness and a resiliency that I also talk and coach my clients around. And it really began with when I emigrated to the U.S. I'm not even first generation. I came from South Korea to the U.S. when I was 6 years old, and we landed in Phoenix, Arizona. And so, you know, I didn't know the language. I'm coming from a completely different context to the U.S. And all I wanted to do was fit in and understand what is this? What are the new norms? How do the people work here? I just wanted to make friends, really. So I had to really hustle. And I think it was in that experience that really ingrained in me being resourceful and being ambitious.
Yeah. And I remember you telling me a story about how you didn't speak English very well, and you literally only knew how to say no. So can you share with the listeners a little bit? It's both heart-wrenching, but also very telling about your character.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's one of those stories that always stands out to you, because it's in my formative years. And for me, and because of the work that I do, I'm in the right field because I love people. And even back then, all I wanted to do was connect and make friends and get along and have people like me. And I think a lot of kids want that at that age when they're new. So I remember standing in line. This must have been after recess, and we're all standing in line ready to go back into class. And I'm standing there just like an eager student. And
how old are you at the time, Sohee?
Oh, I must have been no older than 6'7". Wow. I just, yeah. And so a couple of kids turn around and they say to me, all you know how to say is no, you don't know how to speak English. And literally, Christopher, all I could say was no back, because that is all I knew how to say at the time. And I was both embarrassed. I was so embarrassed and, you know, ashamed. And, you know, all I wanted to do was learn the language so I could make some friends. I was made fun of a lot. Yeah.
And so you and I have that commonality in that I wasn't an immigrant, but my parents were. But growing up in New York City, when I was 6 or 7 years old, my teacher, not a classmate, but my teacher saying, "Christopher, shut up." Now, of course, they didn't say that, but they said, "Christopher, you're talking too much. You're going to stay after class." And back then, there were actually chalkboards. We actually used chalk.
Yeah.
And you would tell me, right, I want to talk in class 100 times and 200 times. But what I'm saying is those traumatic experiences of people, whether your classmate or teacher saying that, I know why I'm driven. Literally, a person of authority silenced my voice. When people ask me, what's my origin story? Well, if you were silenced as a young kid, wouldn't you want to share your voice? And now I want to share other people's voice, like your story, right? But for the people that are listening, just know that if you've had certain moments that are traumatic and challenging, look at your story, Sohee, because you have this great ambition that literally propels you. Now, going back to the whole NASA thing, it just inspires me because you have all this great experience in Bank of America, Washington Mutual, Warner Brothers. And I say this because a lot of people that are coaches, they don't have your breadth of experience, whether from the academic standpoint of getting a PhD, but also the actual practical experience. So first, let's talk about some of the things you learn at working at these global brands. Because like for me, for instance, working at American Express 20 years ago, not knowing that has allowed me to command $20,000 for a speech now, just like I know when you work with your clients, they're getting so much knowledge and substance from you because you work with these global brands. So talk to us about some things you learned at Bank of America that allowed you to do what you're doing now as an executive coach.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I'm hearing you say is you have both experience and kind of the theories or whatever to do what you do. And I think that's what sets me apart as a top leadership coach, which is I have the pedigree, I have the PhD, but I also have real experience in these great companies like you mentioned. And I get to work with phenomenal clients like Netflix and Universal Music Group and Guitar Center that allows me to keep, you know, being relevant in the field. And so, you know, I think it was very strategic and intentional in choosing different fields like NASA. You know, that was a jumping off point that propelled my career into other areas, but I was very intentional in choosing really different experiences and companies so that I could experience everything and get as much as I could in my toolkit. So, you know, financial services, engineering, entertainment, production, startups, I've kind of done it all and have had the honor of working with great companies. And also my biggest learning, I think, is being a leader myself. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't just working in the companies. I was promoted. I was promoted probably, 3 times when I was at Countrywide, which is now Bank of America. And so at the early age of, I want to say 29 or 30 is when I led my first team. And so in doing that, I made a lot of mistakes. And so I can really coach clients from that space. And then having been at Warner Brothers, now Warner Media, and leading the domestic organization development team and change management team, you know, again, I got the opportunity to do it over. And I have to tell you, I probably did it better than I did the first time around, but that's the point. So I have real experience to draw from in when I coach my clients, which sets me apart.
Yeah, and I've read some of your client testimonials as well as what your colleagues have said. They're like saying you're effervescent and you're this firebrand and you're both tactical and strategic. And that's really important because you have the more macro. And the reason why it's so important is because a lot of people say, "Christopher, I'm not getting as far as I want." I'm like, well, you got to meet someone like Sohee, because unless you've been there, you really can't be helped to get there.
Right.
You know? And so in your case, you've already had this ambition and you have this heart and this compassion, but you also have the experience. So let's talk about some of the clients you've worked with and just share with our listeners and viewers and your future fans how you go about helping your clients as an executive coach.
Yeah, I think the first and foremost is really to suss out who's ready to do the engagement. But in my 20 years of doing this, I've been able to sit with top of the house, which is, you know, CEOs and presidents of business units. So I can be there and really talk strategy. And I can dive down into everyday management and our frontline employees, because again, I was one, I was a leader and all of that. But typically it's really finding out, okay, so what is the challenge that's being presented to the potential coachee? And let's talk about that. But beyond that, we have to figure out how do other people perceive? So Christopher, if you're my client, how are you showing up in the world?
I'm sold. I'm signing you up for today.
Yeah, right? I mean, the people that you interact with, we have to get feedback. And that's where we build kind of the foundation of our start. So this is how you come across. You've got some great strengths. You have some opportunities, clearly. So let's work on that. Now, this is very broad strokes, obviously, but it starts from kind of knowing, okay, where are my blind spots? And then how can I, as the coach, really help you move forward in the best way possible?
Yeah. And I also like when you say you dive deep, you really do. I mean, you literally have these competency certifications that you've taken to kind of talk to us about that.
No,
but again, it's there's a reason why Bill Gates and Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, they're like these really brainy people, but they're very analytical. Mm-hmm. And so you have these motivational coaches that, yeah, you can be motivated, but you have methodology, you have science-backed research. So talk to us about why these certifications are helpful when you do work with your executive clients or these emerging leaders.
Yeah, because I think that you probably know this, Christopher, there are so many people out there that call themselves coaches. And I think these days it's really easy to do that, kind of hang a shingle, I'm a coach. but really the rigor, there is rigor and science behind it. I talk a lot about rewiring the brain, and there's brain research around emotional intelligence and mindfulness. And so for me, it's really being able to bring that to the table, as well as a framework in which I guide my clients through that is proven because it's worked, because I know that clients have, you know, unlocked their challenges and propel themselves forward. So that's what I do, which is I bring that science, I bring the methodology and the framework that we're going to go through.
And you're just a nice person. You know what I mean? Like sometimes, no, because I mean, it sounds like obvious, but it's not. I mean, there's a lot of coaches out there. They're just not very presentable. But in terms of the competency part, I mean, literally when you talk about proven, when they do these StrengthFinder tests, or when MIT has this human dynamic laboratory, these really legit brands, they like go deep. They're like 7-year study or 50,000 surveys. So I'm letting our listeners and viewers know that when you share things, this is like not just Dr. Sohee Jun talking about this, it's also other doctors and research. So it's just a profound thing because you're saving your clients so much time. When it's all said and done, you literally are propelling your clients forward. And a lot of people don't think that they need it, but they really do because it allows you to get to where you want to go faster, right? Mm-hmm. Now, for you, this is a bit of a question directed to women because you're a successful woman. And I said this to you before I interviewed you, where I did some research and I had to laugh because I said, Sohee, this is what, again, your supposed colleagues, where you were sitting, I'm not going to mention who the names were, but you're literally sitting there looking all professional, very poised, spoke well, articulated yourself well. This one male colleague on the left was literally looking down, either falling asleep or on a phone.
Yeah.
And the other male colleague sandwiching you was literally almost like judging you. And I said to you, Sohee, look, this is literally the establishment of an older white man. Nothing against white men or men in general, because I'm a man. But I said, Sohee, do you see this? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, look, you're the most professional, articulate person on the stage. And this literally guy is like, look, and you're like, oh, you didn't even notice that. I was like, yeah. But for the woman out there, for the woman that want to be successful like you, where they literally see that, yeah, maybe the bar is a little bit lower if you are a Caucasian man. Not to say that they're not successful, but that's really what you see is what you believe. And I literally saw that. I had to laugh, but also know that one guy was like this, the other guy was like almost sleeping. And that's so disrespectful, to be honest, right?
Yeah, so, and I love that you pointed that out because I'm like, you're right.
Like, yeah, the best posture, most articulate, had a lot of substance, were the other two guys. It's like, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and often, you know, I think that we as women are put in those scenarios where we do have to outperform and we do have to be doubly ready. And that's just how we get to the top, right? We're trained that way. You're not experienced enough, so we get more experience. So we get all the degrees and all the certifications to even feel like we are ready to take the next step. Whereas, you know, and this is a little bit of gender bias, but like men will throw themselves, you know, into it before they're even ready. So there is that. And I appreciate that you pointed that out.
Well, let's talk about that. If there's a woman listener, which there'll be many, whether they're executives or emerging leaders, what do you say to these individuals, specifically women that want to be like you, frankly? Successful, ambitious, focused, professional.
Yeah, and I start with really listening to the unique individual. So whether they're women or not, for me, it starts with, okay, so what is your experience and what does success look like for you? So Christopher, your definition of success might look different than mine. So let's figure that out from a place of values. What do you value now? And how do we get you to integrate more of that into your life so that you're successful? So if success looks like, hey, I want that next senior VP role, let's talk about why and how to get you there authentically by being you authentically and amplifying your strengths. I am a firm believer that if you come across as inauthentic and you're embracing all these other things that you should be doing, it's never going to work for you. And I know that because, you know, for me, the biggest feedback I get is like, you're so authentic and I resonate with you because of that. And so as a coach, I really work with people and especially women to own their authenticity and work with it and amplify their strengths so that they can get to that SVP level or whatever it is that they're trying to achieve.
To be like you. So, yeah, well, and let's talk about that because you have written a book called Mommy Tracked. Yes. And it's not easy to have any career, but especially as your mother, you had three young kids at the time. And so talk to us about the journey of you being an author and why you even chose to write it. Because I know your kids at the time were quite young. I think under five, all three of them, I think, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's as with writing a book, it's always a journey. That's kind of a winding road. There's lots of starts and stops. So in total, I want to say this took 2 years, and from the idea being brought forth for me to actually launching it back in August. So it's been a little over a month now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I do have to share it. This is it. Mommy Track.
Oh, yeah.
A number one bestseller on Amazon.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So people can find it there. But really, the idea came forward when I was sitting down with a person that was on my team. And we would always sidetrack our conversations to like, what lit us up inside? What's that passion? And so I was always talking about my kids. At the time, they must have been 1, 3, and 5 or something like that. And how do I make this work? What's my success look like? What's next for me as a working mom that's ambitious? Do I do this lean-in thing? I don't know. What do I do? And so she reflected back for me. She's like, listen, this is what you write about because it's my lived experience. And I know if I'm struggling with that in terms of defining success for me authentically and going for it, then I know other women are as well. And so having that conversation, I was like, oh my God, that's absolutely it. So the idea was born and I write from a place of experience, but also the woman that I've coached who talk about that, who say, you know what, maybe climbing the traditional way isn't for me. So then let's figure out what that is and have you unapologetically go for it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's so, also for not just working moms, it's just for any ambitious woman,
yeah,
really.
Yeah. Well, again, it's called Mommy Track. So, but let's talk about that in terms of the actual contents of the book. What are some specific lessons you can share with our viewers to really, if they're listening, they're moms, what would you want to share with them relative to just having that perspective and path toward success?
Yeah. So the overarching premise is this, you have to own the season of life that you're in. So what my life looked like, you know, when my kids were 1, 3, and 5 looks a lot different now when my oldest is going to be 11 this weekend to 9-year-old to 6-year-old. And so it's really owning that all of our kind of what we desire will change with the times as well, right? So, okay, what season are you in and what are your values currently? So in other words, what are your priorities, right? So, and I ask them to slim it down. Let's not think of 5 priorities, think of 2 and get really crystal clear on that. Then look at your everyday life. Are you integrating those things that are important to you in your everyday life? And if not, why? So let's get rid of all the shoulds in our life because guess what? Many of us, not only women, live from a place of shoulds. Oh, we should make dinner every night. Oh, we should be doing all of the whatever you want to put in the quotes. So get rid of the shoulds and really integrate those things that are important to you in the season that you're in.
Well, that's a very powerful perspective, Sohee. I remember there was a professor that talked about how he did an experiment with his students and he put a glass jar on this table in front of his students. Mm-hmm. And next to the glass jar, you had these very large rocks, then pebbles, and then sand. And he asked the students, what should we do to fill this jar? And the students were like, oh, let's put the sand in first. Or some of them said, let's put the rocks in her first. And some of them put the pebbles in first to try to fill this jar. But the whole point of the lesson was that he said, you know what? Your priorities are like those big rocks. Like what you're saying, what are the things you should do or want to do and need to do? So the big rocks are the things, the biggest priorities. In your case, you want to be a mother, you want to be a coach, you want to be an author. Those are big rocks. And unfortunately, a lot of people get sidetracked with these pebbles, which are relationships that they might think are going somewhere, but they're not. And lastly, sand. Sand is like, oh, I'm going to go on Instagram. Oh, I'm going to go gossip. All these things that we all do, but they fill their whole lives with all these sand and pebbles that don't have significance and don't have those big rocks. And one through line, one theme that I've seen in this whole interview is like, you're very clear with how you express. You're very deep in terms of the questions you ask. So what do you encourage your clients and our viewers to really understand? What are those big rocks, those priorities in their lives? Because there's a lot of stuff coming at you, right? Like your kids, for instance.
Yeah. There's so, I love what you said there, Christopher, because we live in distraction mode. And we think the small sands are the big thing. So the number one thing I get really ambitious women and leaders to do is to slow down. And guess what? You know, we've been forced to do that because of COVID and quarantine and all of that. So let's slow down and be very intentional about what we do and how we integrate going forward. And what I call micro steps. You know, people often go, oh my God, it's so overwhelming. Well, you know what? Is, you know, talking about what you want to do the next day intentionally overwhelming? Probably not, because we're going to take a micro step. So we're not looking at from here to a year from now. We're talking about what are you going to do the next day that's different and intentional? What are you going to do in 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months? And so these are the kind of strategies I give my coachees to make it manageable by taking micro steps, but really about, it's about that.
No, that's great. So let's talk about that. You work with both executives and emerging leaders. So can you give us an example of an executive you work with and just how you've been able to change your life? And then we'll go into the whole emerging leaders part as well.
Yeah, I had the good fortune of working with, this was in production entertainment space over the course of last year, in which, you know, he really had to learn how to be a leader. In the creative world, he was used to just doing that and writing and loved doing that. But writing is different than showing up as a leader of a 250-person company with millions of dollars on the line. They were producing a show every week. And so it was really pivotal and critical for him to embrace, okay, you know what? I have to delegate. And what does that look like for me? And being intentional about that. How do I empower the people that I hired to do the work I hired them to do? And what does that look like? And how do I listen better? So that we worked on really three key things that sound simple, but in practice are really hard to do, and got him to turn it around. So from the start of the engagement, you know, we had all that feedback that he had to delegate and really listen and give the people that he hired to do the power to do their work. By the end of our engagement, it was night and day, Christopher. I have to say, people were like, oh my gosh, you have turned him around. And so to me, that was the highlight, of which he totally turned his leadership style around and was very successful going forward.
No, and that's one of the things about coaching. You literally can transform lives. Every time you work with these individuals, you can dissect what they're good at, what they're not good at. Again, it's knowing not just the strengths, but the weaknesses. So I'm curious, since you have this great pedigree and this great experience, it's very easy for you to just focus on executives, but you chose also work with emerging leaders. So I'm sure someone's client, your client's calling right now, you know, which is fine, but emerging leaders, why that as well? Because executives are one really clear wheelhouse. But you also chose emerging leaders, which are the future executives.
Yes. So I love that you asked that question. And I love working with emerging leaders because that's my sweet spot. So if you recall, I told you I was a leader back at Countrywide, B of A days, as well as Warner Brothers, now Warner Media. And, you know, I was in that particularly difficult place of not having all of the influence as a leader, having a senior VP and VP above me, being a executive director and managing a large team, but my span and influence was a little bit limited. And so being in that role by the way, did you know that being at the emerging leader kind of mid-tier management space, you have the most responsibility, right? Because you're working directly with employees. Yeah. And I have this fact on my website. So we have a lot of responsibility, but maybe not enough like power to move things through. So it's a specific challenge that people in this space have. And because I have experience being in that space, I really like to coach with to those people because I understand it.
Any specific client examples you can share with us?
Oh goodness, there are many. Yeah, and I would say mostly in the entertainment space. So this person, and I have recency effect, which means that I just remember the most recent thing. Was, you know, really needing to, and again, this was in entertainment and media, really needing to own her new role. And this was a production company really ramping up from a smaller size to a really big size company. And she was in a different role, going from kind of a smaller role to a mid-tier role. And so what did that look like for her? How does she show up differently? What skills and strategies does she need to employ to be successful in that role?
That's amazing. So, I mean, when people don't know about entertainment, it's a very chaotic world because there's so much change going on. Film is different from TV, and TV is different from commercials, and you have Netflix, you have all these things going on. So the listeners that may not know this, or the viewers that might not know this, that when you're able to apply your skill sets to entertainment, you're going to pretty much apply that to any vertical because it's just those foundational skills that you have. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious because ultimately, every athlete you meet, whether it's a Kobe Bryant, who unfortunately obviously passed away, or a Michael Phelps, who won the most medals in any Olympics, they have coaches. Yeah. And there's a reason why they have coaches, because you have to understand that there has to be someone around you to point out those different things. But yet when people in their careers, they don't have coaches, they almost like, I don't need a coach. And I'm like, do you want to be successful? So I'm curious. Right. When you work with people that have that, yeah, I don't know if I need a coach. And I'm like, you might want to hire Sohee because she has all this great experience. Yeah. So first of all, what do you say to people that might think they don't need a coach? And then lastly, what are some things that you really have taught your clients that they you know, these transformational experiences? We'll just start with that first question first. Like, the people that might not think they need a coach for their career, what do you say to those individuals?
You know, I think I always lead with curiosity. And this is a mindset that I try to instill in my coaches as well, because it opens up questions. So I would just be curious about why. Tell me more about, you know, why you don't think you need a coach. And it might be right, and I could add something there. But I also am very careful to not take on clients that don't want a coach, because I'm not trying to take you to, you know, a place of believing that you need something. I work with people that feel that they're ready to propel. And if they're not, it's not worth my time or theirs. I'm not trying to convince anyone to take me on as their coach. So that's first and foremost. So, you know, just being curious about why, and maybe I add some nuggets about what a coach can do, and, you know, preview for them what it could look like, and then let that percolate. They might come back, they might not, and that's okay. I have a full roster and people waiting. Yeah. So, you know, I'm careful to take on people that are really ready to do the work, because it's hard work. If you want to transform in any area of your life, you have to do the work.
Yeah. And the thing I'm going to end with, Sohee, is going back to the analogy of NASA and propulsion. Literally, it's like, look, the rocket is going up. And I know how to do that. I've helped all these clients literally transform their lives. It's not like, oh, we'll just take a car or a bicycle or even a motorcycle. It's like, no, this is a propellant. It's like a rocket.
Yeah.
And for you, what's the one advice that you've often given to your clients that you've literally seen this propulsion effect, this transformation? What's one principle, theme, skill set that you feel that you've really been able to help your clients with that has really propelled them to the next level in their careers?
Yeah, I would say there are so many things, but I'll distill it down to being clear about the why. And there's a lot of people that talk about this, but it's so important, because if you're not clear why you want that next big role, or to be an entrepreneur, or to be an author, who is going to believe that you want to do that, right? So you have to get really still and say, okay, I want this because I want my work to be in service and to help people. And dive even deeper. Well, why do you want to help people? And once you get real clear on what it is you want to do, then you can rocket forward with the right type of support, like a coach.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. I mean, going back to your story about how when you first came as an immigrant and all you knew how to say was no, but it's still very telling that one of your best qualities is that you're authentic. You have all these great professional qualities, but when your clients work with you, they know that you're on their side. They know that you're going to tell them the truth. They know that you're authentic. And that's the single most important quality you need as a coach, because you can't coach anyone if you can't be honest.
Right.
And so I hope our listeners and viewers really learn from you, know that you are this propellant, this great coach for either for executives or emerging leaders, because you have this beautiful understanding of life, both on the theoretical, educational side, but also professional side. So thank you so much for being on our show. Really appreciate you and hope you have a great day. Sohi.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Gifters Podcast. If you want to learn how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business, go to christopherkai.com to learn more.